It's 7:41 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Bob Powell. Time is running out to re-up a tax that supports the Federal Black Lung Disability Trust Fund. People in the Ohio Valley are working to put pressure on lawmakers.
I have lived in Appalachia almost 40 years. As our society makes the transition to clean energy, we should not forget how our coal miners provided the foundation.
That's coming up on this West Virginia morning. First, this news. Dominion Energy wants customers to pay more than $300 million, which would cover the cost of upgrading three coal-burning power plants, plus some extra money. The Richmond Times-Dispatch reports Dominion filed an application Friday with the State Commission, or rather the State Corporation Commission, to recover the cost of the projects plus a 9.2% return. The upgrades bring the plants up to federal and state environmental standards. Bills would increase by $2.15 for households using about 1,000 kilowatt hours per month starting in November 2019. The three plants are Chesterfield and Clover in Virginia and the Mount Storm site in West Virginia. Dominion says the upgrades allow for cleaner disposal of coal ash. The State Corporation Commission must approve Dominion's plan before it can begin charging customers for the upgrades. One way to lessen the effects of climate change is to stop letting carbon emissions into the atmosphere. Scientists are searching for ways to capture the gas and store it, but that emerging technology has been slow to roll out. State Impact Pennsylvania's Amy Sisk looks at what the Commonwealth is doing to develop it and what obstacles stand in its way. She starts at Pennsylvania State University.
I am walking through campus looking for the building where I'm about to meet with a couple of researchers, and I think I'm here.
Hi there, so nice to meet you.
We all crowd around a table in one of the school's engineering departments.
My name is Tieyuan Zhu. I'm an assistant professor of geophysics.
I'm Eugene Morgan. I'm an assistant professor of petroleum and natural gas engineering.
I'm Sanjay Srinivasan. I'm a professor in the Department of Energy and Mineral Engineering.
We're here to talk about carbon capture and sequestration. When you hear people say clean coal, that's what they're talking about. It might just be the key to preventing a climate disaster if scientists and companies can figure out whether it works and how to do it cheaply. The people in this room are trying. They're studying carbon dioxide, the greenhouse gas emitted by coal and natural gas-fired power plants, and by industry. The idea is to filter out the CO2 from the rest of the emissions, then shoot it through a pipeline to an injection site where it's pumped into the ground. Here's Srinivasan.
It's not like there is a swimming pool where these things are stored. These gases and supercritical fluids have to migrate through very small pore spaces.
The hope is they'll stay trapped in the rock forever. Question is, what if one day the carbon dioxide moves somewhere unwanted?
It's really important to keep track of where the CO2 is in this.
Morgan says in places where this is being tested, carbon dioxide is often injected down old wells into oil fields.
Those wells offer a very nice pathway for CO2 to travel up.
Potentially into an aquifer or back up into the air. Here's Srinivasan again.
Eventually, if you want to keep the greenhouse gas away from the environment, and if it seeps back into the environment, that's always a problem.
They're trying to develop a way to track CO2 with data from injection sites in Texas and Mississippi. When pushed underground at a high pressure, carbon dioxide forms small cracks in the rock.
I have a sound. Probably I can show you now.
Sue queues up a PowerPoint presentation and hits play. He's turned seismic data into sound to help explain it. Those pops indicate the energy from the carbon dioxide traveling about the fractures. The smaller the fracture, the slower the pops. The goal is to create a way to follow the spread of carbon dioxide in real time. Between Penn State, other universities, and a Department of Energy lab near Pittsburgh, a lot of research on carbon capture and sequestration is taking place in Pennsylvania. But on-the-ground projects testing this technology are located elsewhere. Some people, like John Quigley, say they could be here.
We found that Pennsylvania had several hundred years' worth of storage potential.
A decade ago, Quigley was Secretary of the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources when the agency released several reports on the potential for the technology in Pennsylvania. Quigley at the time served in the Rendell administration, and he wanted to pursue what he calls a carbon network, capturing carbon dioxide from the state's coal plants and piping it to a site for storage. He knows that's a heavy lift, and he says governors since have not pursued it.
It starts with a demonstration of leadership and intent at the state level that this is a priority, and then gathering the stakeholders and starting the really complicated conversations about how we're going to move this thing off square one.
The topic has not totally fallen off the state's radar. The state is in a regional partnership testing storage underground, and Governor Tom Wolf urged Congress to increase a tax credit for storage projects. That measure passed earlier this year. Jared Daniels with the U.S. Department of Energy says it could make a difference.
There are a lot of people out in private sectors and private companies in the United States that are talking about it.
Because capturing carbon emissions hits a big obstacle, cost. Take, for example, the $1 billion project completed at a coal plant in Texas last year, the first major carbon capture system in the United States.
If you go out and talk to some of the folks that have started those first-of-a-kind units, they know that if they built a second-of-a-kind, it would come in probably 20 or 30% cheaper just because of the lessons that they learned building and operating that first unit for a year or two.
Given the price tag, federal and state subsidies have helped the industry pioneer the technology. Some experts, like Ed Rubin at Carnegie Mellon University, say tougher regulations are needed to make it more widespread.
Policies come in two flavors, carrots and sticks. Turns out most people like carrots more than sticks.
That tax credit Congress passed last year, he considers that a carrot.
I think carrots are wonderful. We need carrots.
But he says we need sticks, too. Major policies like the Obama-era plan requiring states to dramatically cut emissions, or a cap-and-trade system, or a carbon tax.
If the motivating issue is climate change, we need deep reductions in emissions, not shallow reductions, and we need them fairly quickly.
Back at the Penn State campus, the researchers also feel the clock ticking as they work to better track the movement of carbon dioxide underground. Here's Morgan.
That sort of tool needs to be developed, approved, and field ready.
So that even bigger carbon storage operations can start up. Srinivasan says that's an important part of the strategy to combat climate change because the transition to renewable energy is slow. Flip on a light switch, and more often than not, that electricity still comes from fossil fuels.
In my opinion, I think these gentlemen will agree that carbon sequestration, especially geologic sequestration, is almost a must. We have to do it.
They're just trying to make it happen sooner rather than later. Amy Sisk, State Impact Pennsylvania.
State Impact Pennsylvania is a collaboration between WHYY, WITF, WESA, and the Allegheny Front to cover the Commonwealth's energy economy. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Bob Powell. It's 7:51. Skies will be partly sunny today, and tomorrow it'll be cloudy and colder overnight. There's a chance of some light rain, freezing rain, or fog in the eastern mountains today. High temperatures will be only in the 30s and 40s. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by Jenkins Fenster Maker, PLLC, approaching each legal matter with attention to detail, representing businesses and individuals throughout West Virginia, eastern Kentucky, and southeastern Ohio. As Congress nears the end of its season, the clock is ticking on a tax that supports the Federal Black Lung Disability Trust Fund. The fund provides benefits to tens of thousands of sick coal miners in the Ohio Valley. If Congress doesn't extend the tax, the fund would likely slide deeper into debt just as the region is seeing a surge in new cases of black lung. As Becca Schimmel reports, the decision is largely in the hands of Kentucky Senator Mitch McConnell.
About a dozen residents from eastern Kentucky's coal mining region crowded into the lobby of the local field office of Senator Mitch McConnell. McConnell's staff let them in a few at a time to make their case for funding the Federal Black Lung Disability Trust Fund. The energy was upbeat, there was a lot of laughter, but you could feel the anxiety. They know the clock is ticking on a tax that supports the fund. Some people brought written statements to read to the senator's staff.
Oh, I have lived in Appalachia almost 40 years. As our society makes the transition to clean energy, we should not forget how our coal miners provided the foundation.
Virginia Maher worked with disabled miners when she moved to the area. Another constituent, Morgan Brown, says she's visiting McConnell's office on behalf of her father, a retired coal miner suffering from black lung. Brown said her father worked for different coal companies across the state, and now he struggles with the disease and fights to get benefits from the industry.
You thought that, you know, these were your employers, they cared about you, but now in the end of all of it, he's not working anymore. Just to see him fight so hard against him is just like I said, it's just infuriating. You just really feel anger.
Brown's father is seeking benefits from a company he worked for, but more than 25,000 miners depend on the Black Lung Disability Trust Fund because a responsible employer cannot be identified. An excise tax on coal supports the fund, but it was deep in debt, so Congress roughly doubled the tax in 1981 and renewed it 10 years ago. That rate expires at the end of the year. A May report from the Government Accountability Office estimates that could put the fund billions of dollars further into debt unless Congress acts. Retired miner Carl Shoup says if anyone can get Congress to act, it's Kentucky's senior senator.
Senator McConnell is one, he's the most powerful senator in the world, you know, as far as that goes. If he gets on this, he can push it through. And I believe that. And I hate to put that on him, but it's the truth, you know.
As majority leader, Senator McConnell could find a way to extend the tax. During an October event in the area, he appeared to indicate he would do just that.
That'll be taken care of before that would get into an expiration situation. It just won't be allowed to be unfunded.
Now, with less than a week remaining in the legislative session, Black Lung advocates are still waiting for McConnell to act. McConnell's office did not say if he intends to extend the tax, but in a written statement, McConnell says he will, quote, work to maintain and protect benefits for miners. McConnell seems pulled by opposing forces, the sick miners who are his constituents and the mining industry where they worked. Tyler White is president of the Kentucky Coal Association. White says the tax isn't going away, it's just going back to the level Congress originally intended.
Extending current to, you know, higher tax rates beyond their scheduled expiration, we kind of look at that as a tax increase at a time when we're still experiencing a significant economic stress.
White says that would hurt the coal industry's ability to remain viable, which could put the fund in jeopardy if there's no coal production to be taxed. Coal companies doled out more than $20 million in political spending in the last two election cycles, according to the nonprofit Center for Responsive Politics. And about 95% of the industry's campaign contributions went to Republicans. The mining industry's aggressive lobbying appears to be paying off. For example, a draft version of a House tax bill had included a one-year extension of the excise tax on coal. Then the National Mining Association sent members of Congress a letter warning them that the group would penalize them on its annual scorecard if they voted to extend the tax. In a new version of the bill, the coal tax extension was stripped out.
Well, it just shows you how responsive Congress can be to lobbyists from an industry that's on its decline.
That's Wes Addington, deputy director of the Appalachian Citizens Law Center, a nonprofit group focused on Black Lung and other mine region issues.
Why is McConnell not following through with his, you know, sort of promise to miners and their families in Appalachia particularly, and funding this fund that's so crucial to their, you know, health and well-being?
Black Lung advocates aren't giving up. They're heading back to Senator McConnell's regional offices. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Becca Schimmel in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Bob Powell.